House of House, Gaiden, Home of Homes. I am Andrew Taven.
And I am Lenny Burnham. We're going to be continuing our journey talking about different Sherlock Holmes stories as long as SAG is on strike. And we are now talking about A Case of Identity. This is the one where a woman shows up at Holmes's office and says, you know, my fiance completely ghosted me right before we were about to get married. And Holmes figures out that it was, of course, her stepdad in a mustache.
Yes, it was a Woody Allen situation, allegedly. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Apologies to Sarah. Maybe it's just the adventures of Sherlock Holmes. I feel like these are progressively getting a little worse.
This one was stupid in a way that really did it for me. I liked this one. My favorite thing about it is that one of the subtle things that Holmes picks up on is that he just like sounds like a guy in a disguise. That was like my favorite part when he's like, oh, like one thing I noticed is that when I asked what your fiance looked like, you were like, well, he had big Groucho Marx glasses and he was always covering his face with a magazine.
Yeah. I thought for a moment I was like, oh, is this early trans representation? Because she's like, and his voice is kind of high and weird, but he said it was because he had disease when he was younger. And he's like short. I think she describes him as short also. But it's not the case. It is a little also like, it's very different from the last one where it was like, aha, it was a well-known criminal who wasn't brought up before, who Sherlock Holmes was just aware of. And this time it's like, it was, aha, the other person mentioned in
the
story.
Exactly. It has like the exact opposite problem where we talked about how with the Red-Headed League, it's like you wouldn't guess the ending because there's no reason you would. And then this one, it's like there were literally no other options. Her stepdad was the guy in the story.
Yeah, where she's like, yeah, and it was so weird. We were having a date to a restaurant, and I told him I wanted to meet my stepdad. And he said he could come to the restaurant. And then he ran to the bathroom, and my stepdad came out. But then he said that he had just – I told him he just missed him. So he went to go and find him. But then he came back. Like, the 30 Rock with – what's the name? Kenneth Toilet Hole or Keith Toilet Hole or whatever, where Liz finds out, has to use like the men's room because the woman's room is full or something, and she overhears Kenneth saying something and he like venting, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna Keith Toilet Hole or whatever. And then he's like, you and Liz Lemon should meet up. And she's like, yeah, that'd be great. Here's the time, the restaurant. Why am I doing that? So first off, this is another one where we also get Watson mentioning one of his patients, where he's just like, oh my God, this patient was like dying or whatever. I had to wait there for hours. And then finally I got to leave and go back to hang out with my boyfriend. It's one where there's just not, there's not enough like red herrings to me where it's just like, oh, so they mention a typewriter a bunch of times and all his notes are typewritten. And also there's a stepfather. It was either her mother or the stepfather.
They try to act like there's like a bunch of subtle clues put together, but also like Sherlock Holmes openly says like, and it's also because he was the only person with motivation to do this.
And she mentions like, oh yeah, they're taking my money gradually, but it's very weird also because I think Watson or someone was just like, yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense that he would leave before he'd accessed her money. Like, that's so random.
Yeah.
And he gets real pissed at the stepfather. Like,
This is, I think, actually one of the most Greg House-like stories because he has like no sympathy when he's actually talking to the woman. Like he's just like, oh yeah, you'll never see your fiance again. Yeah. Bye. But then he's like so mad on her behalf and like actually is sympathetic. And I love that combo.
Yeah. It's all well, like when he says like, God, sorry. It also reminds me of a different 30 Rock moment where I think it's Tracy who is always like, they for like the second half of the series, they have a running joke where he's always like shitting on .com. And then there's a part where he like says something so nice about him, like, you should say it to .com. He's like, no, he can't know how much I respect him.
Yeah.
Where that's, it feels like the woman where like Holmes is like, him saying just like, yeah, no, forget about that guy. And she's like, I think he's coming back. And he's like, all right, your funeral, whatever. Bye.
Yeah.
Because he's also like, well, we can never tell her. The fact also, because like the stepdad is like younger, that the mother is like a cougar. Her mother is like a.
Yeah, they her stepdad's 5 years older than her.
For some reason, which I feel like must have been very scandalous. Maybe more scandalous.
Yeah, it is kind of, it is a hot setup.
Yeah, I wonder if that's also supposed to be part of it, where you're like, oh, this is, you know, this is clearly a den, this home is a den of iniquity. I mean, the fact that he's like, oh, you have to sell your, like, profitable business or whatever is very, is that supposed to be because, like, he's worried she would meet someone through the business? I don't know. It's just supposed to be like he's a jerk.
Yeah, I guess he's, like, controlling, and, yeah, he's, like, worried that she's gonna meet someone.
Yeah. And he's just like, oh, this will be great. She'll stay around for, like, another 10 years if,
Yeah, the stepdad could have probably just, like, asked her to financially help him and her mom. She seems, like, pretty nice.
Yeah, and she's like, I don't even really need the money. It's fine. It's, you get one of those interesting, like, things where that feels like kind of modern, or like kind of like, I don't know, you don't think of that, where she's like, oh yeah, it's from my uncle who lives in New Zealand, and he has like, you know, it sounds like he was like one of the first settlers there, and he has all this land they took from the natives, and so he gives sense.
Yeah, that is like something that's so insane when you read old English literature, is that everyone's money is just like, oh yeah, like atrocities are happening in another country, and so I get like $15 a month.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, and that's like why they were doing it. All this stuff, it's so like wild when you see like the history takes that are trying to be like, you know, I don't know, making it seem noble or making it seem whatever, where it's just like, it's all been investments for a while. I saw, as it tends to be the case on X these days, I saw some thread with that racist French guy. I don't know if you know who I mean. He has his head turned to the side, and he has takes like, no food is good made by non-white people or whatever, which is, you know, obviously a wild, like, even if you were racist, I feel like that's just like, if you're just like, oh, I don't know, white people, don't clip this, white people are so cool and they should be kings of everywhere, I feel like you'd still be like, and the food should be prepared by other people.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't even feel like, you know, you have to give up that much in your crazy racist philosophy to give that. But he had something where he was just like, you know, oh, I'm so worried about demographics and if white people become a minority. And someone was like, why? It seems fine. And he's like, well, look at, like, I don't know, Zambia or something. It's like, first of all, it's very different to be like, I'm worried about immigration. Like, first off, already not worth, like, engaging with on the surface. But also, like, again, just as, like, a factual thing, like, feels like a really weird comparison to be like, oh, I'm worried about all these immigrants coming in because I'm worried it'll be just like when all those white people came in. And then they, right. You know, people were like, according to him, I suppose, the wrong level of upset that they were ruled with an iron fist by foreign invaders. Anyway. But, yeah, this one...
I was just going to say, this story, like, it starts off with and then, like, sort of represents this thing that Doyle is super into that I think is interesting about how, like, kind of, like, small and pointless stuff is more interesting than big stuff. Like, his whole sort of philosophy is he's like, oh, if someone, you know, murders four people, you get it. Like, but this little stuff is really interesting to me, which I think is, like, a really interesting idea, but it's also just, like, in practice so weird. Like, it would be like if on House he was always like, what's really medically fascinating is this person who had, like, a hangnail and a skin reaction at the same time and how that interacted. And it's like, that might in a way be true.
Yeah, I mean, he sometimes does that, but normally it's, like, something...
But they're always dying. Like, he's not, like...
I mean, I actually, did not love the intro. I felt like it was kind of going along and doesn't really seem that relevant.
It's so long. He also... That's something I hate about how these stories are written.
When he's like, oh, the details of the case, it's like, oh, it's an easy case, it's stupid, whatever. But the details are fascinating. And then afterwards, I'm like, wait, which ones? The fact that it was her stepfather is the fascinating part, because also you're like, this happens all the time, and you're like, what, the stepfather thing? Or like a case of identity happens where someone pretends to be another person to, like, catfish their, you know, or I guess in this case it'd be codfish if it happens in England, their stepdaughter. And then Mr. Hosmer Angel also feels like a very fake name, which is what the name is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, obviously, like, on a real level, I do, like, feel sorry for this woman, and there's no reason you would think that anyone would ever do this to you, but it is, like, hilarious how much her description is like, I don't know, he just seemed like extremely fake and made up.
Yeah. Please, Mr. Fakeman, I will wait your return.
Yes. I met this guy named Stuart last name, and he was always just wearing, like, a ski mask.
There's also, sorry, this is the line I remember where I love when you see, like, older, I think there was a previous one where he literally had the, like, Watson ejaculated or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, old, or, like, that comic, that Batman comic where the Joker is like, ah, but I made the biggest boner of all. This is a boner that even Batman won't be able to unbone or whatever. Just stuff that doesn't at all think, because there was one line that stuck out to me on page, well, 73 of this particular copy, but it's towards the end where it says with blah blah blah, he disguised himself, sunk that clear voice into an insinuating whisper, and doubly secure on account of the girl's short sight, he appears as Mr. Hosmer Angel and keeps off other lovers by making love himself. Which absolutely sounds like he's banging his stepdaughter.
Horrifying.
But I guess back then they were like, you know, you'd better not be making love in there, by which I mean bringing her to meet your father to see if you can pay the proper dowry and approval or whatever. Like,
I also love what you brought up in that quote, the thing about how she was short-sighted. Like, I just had this, like, horrifying moment of, like, before glasses technology got good, were people just constantly dating their stepdad and not knowing it?
Oh my god. That's a new...
Before the bifocal was invented.
That's a new category on Pornhub or something. Woman loses glasses, has sex with stepson or whatever. I have no doubt that is something where it's just like, oh honey, your dick seems different or whatever, and it's just like, ooh. Did they ever make, sorry, I'm only thinking about this because rest in peace, today is the day that we are recording this on the day of Dianne Feinstein's passing. Did they ever make a porn version of Weekend at Bernie's?
Oh my god.
I'm just, because, like, that feels like it's right around where they were turning, like, everything. Weekend at Bernie's porn version. Let's see. Someone asked on Reddit. Blah, blah, blah. Oh my God. Sorry. This is from 12 years ago. So I suppose the answer hasn't passed. But this is the most Reddit answer. Rule 34. If it exists, there is porn of it. Therefore, yes, there is porn of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's like, that was like that's the Bechdel test for insufferable internet nerds. No, I don't think there is, which makes sense because, you know, I don't think you'd have trouble selling like a necrophilia movie, but
it would be kind of cute if it was like a dick that couldn't get hard and they were trying to pass it off as a hard dick.
That's actually really the Weekend at Bernie's is about, that's actually really good. Okay. We can pitch this. The Weekend at Bernie's, but like it's about someone with ED who they're trying to pass off as that they're able to get hard, and so they have to like they're like puppeting
up little strings
the dick like underneath the bed. Ooh.
Listeners, it's very important to me that you know that we were like miming a little
absolutely.
Little marionette strings.
See, this is the kind of thing that if we ever start a Patreon, and then we offer the video version of this as a bonus that you would get. So, you know, again, I love throwing out potential potential incentives. I think the other way you would have to do it is you could have it be like a big orgy party that Bernie is throwing, and because, you know, they have like a big party that Bernie's at, and so you don't have anyone actually have sex with the corpse or anything, but the guys have to be like, you know, no, Bernie's here, he says it's cool to have the orgy at his house, and they have to like, they're like fucking, and then like they see his head like go down, so like while fucking they have to like reach over and be like, wow, that's hot stuff or whatever, you know, like that's what you'd have to do, because obviously, you know, no one wants, I mean, I don't understand that now that we have, you know, the internet porn or whatever, this is like such an outdated thing, but when you'd see like those images of like the Seinfeld porn version or like the Simpsons porn version and stuff, and like It's my best guess for the main use case there is like high schoolers trying to pretend that they don't just want to like sneak the tape or like torrent it, which wouldn't make money, so I don't know how that works, to like actually go jerk off to. So they've been like, ah, isn't this funny? Oh man, that's so funny. I have to go to the bathroom. Like, because they saw, you know, Marge Simpson getting
I think it's also just like to distinguish yourself, it's just like there's so many tapes of like, this is a lady with big tits, that if you're like, this one's Elaine from Seinfeld, it's like people might grab that.
Yeah, I could see that. I could also see if you are straight up, I said like for high school boys or whatever, I wonder if that's also was a thing for back when you had to like go to a video store and go to the, I've only seen this in like TV shows, but like go behind like the bead curtain and go there. If you could, if it was less embarrassing to be like, ha ha ha, it's so funny. poor Seinfeld porn. This is so stupid. That whereas if you got like, you know, you pussy destroyer 6 or whatever, then like you're just a pervert, but this you're like, ha ha ha, whatever, I'm gonna show it to my friends and they're gonna see like this is so goofy. I mean, it's tough. I feel like this is a pretty light story. And I know I've said that for the other ones, but I feel like this one even more so, because
yeah, I mean, they have a whole long intro of, like, I think Doyle pretty defensively being like, don't you think that actually stuff where nothing really happened is the most interesting?
Yeah, because he's also, like, he's, like, doing something where he's like, in fact, that's even stranger than fiction, which you're fiction, so that's not, you're writing fiction. And then, like, there's one where he's like, for example, Watson, pick out any story in the newspaper. And he's like, oh, there's a story about a husband who beat his wife. And I'm like, first of all, obviously, you know, want to make clear the House of House podcast and its Guy Den Home of Home side project, incredibly against domestic abuse and don't, you know, think it, not only that, very important issue, shouldn't happen. Was it such a rare occurrence in Victorian England that that would be like a newspaper headline of like man beats wife?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like maybe that was a society. My sense is, and I'd love to be wrong, but I get the sense that like pre the last half century, that was just like a thing that was happening in half of households all the time.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of like assumed that it had like escalated a lot by the time it comes in the newspaper, but like Holmes didn't say that. He just says that it's a fascinating detail that he threw his dentures at her.
And also that he's like, and there was no cheating or whatever, and it was just this. And I'm like, I don't know. This doesn't sound like I wouldn't want to read Sherlock Holmes and the story of the slightly eccentric wife beater. Like, that doesn't right, sound like yeah. a good...
I do really like that moment, though, because, like, Watson is, like, really trying to impress Holmes. Like, he literally reminded me of, like, how I would talk to my dad as a yeah. kid. Like, being like, oh, yeah, this is totally a typical story. I know exactly what it's yeah. gonna be.
Yeah. Oh, I'm aware. Look, this has happened to a lot of my patients who I try and ignore. Like... yeah, I mean, it's you've got that long intro, then you have the woman shows up, and, like, she's not sure if she wants to come in, which is fine. I don't know, and he has a boy. Has he always had that boy? Doesn't he have a boy who's like, the lady's here, sir? Or was that her boy?
I'm not sure, I don't remember.
It's, whatever. They got the boy, she comes in, she's like, oh, here's my story. I met a guy, my stepfather, which she also just calls her stepfather, her father. And Holmes is like, aha, but he has a different last name than you. And she's like, yes, you figured it out. He's my stepfather. And it's like, what a weird thing to deduce when she was just being weird about how she discussed it. Like, it feels weird she would call okay, again, and this might be a cultural thing. The fact that she calls him father consistently throughout when he like married recently feels like it gave me the sense that she's the kind of person who, if they had been like, hey, can you just keep financially supporting us even after you get married, she'd be like, sure, I have
yeah
like a lot of income.
Because it yeah. sounds like, if in order for him to have this motivation, it's like obvious she's not just like giving them like rent and like her food money. Like, it sounds like she is giving them like an actual amount of money to be advantageous to them. So, like, I think she would just keep doing that.
It's very weird that the expectation... She even is like, well, you know, he handles the money or whatever. Which I guess is, like, if she got... it seems like part of the implication is that, like, the patriarchal figure in her life will be the one
right.
managing the money. So I guess if you want a sort of benefit of the doubt, her... stepfather's
yeah, I guess
motivation.
He's just like, any husband would reasonably be like, we have to stop supporting your shitty
yeah, exactly. Can you stop? Can you, didn't you say this guy sucks? Stop giving him your money. And she'd be like, okay. Like, that's how, you know, they had, like, probably Victorian jokes or whatever. That, like, a woman with money is like, what's that joke?
Mule with
a
spinning
a
wheel?
A mule with a spinning wheel, yeah. Where does that come from?
The monorail.
Yes, yes, thank you, of course. It's like exactly. A town with money is like a mule with a monorail. Dang knows how he got it, and he definitely doesn't know what to do with it or whatever. This is such a stupid thing to say, but I'm just like, wow, what a great episode. I know it's like everyone's like, number one already. It's got top meme potential. It's can't be beat. Let's look up if I bet there's multiple Sherlock Holmes porn parodies, but I'm curious. Sherlock Bones feels like an obvious one. Again, this one, not a lot happens in this story. I want to make clear. Okay. Oh, there's 10 of them? Okay, wait. What is the Sherlock? Oh, I wrote parody. I left out the porn part. So there's probably a lot of Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock, a XXX parody. That's not a very clever name. That seems to be the main. Oh, it came out in 2016. It's probably just like a parody of the Robert Downey Jr. one. Mm. So this is on IMDb. Sherlock Holmes, played by Danny Dee, who I assume is a porn star. A clever and renowned London detective uses his cunning and superior powers of deduction to investigate crimes. Okay, that's just Sherlock Holmes. With help from his, brilliant and sexy assistant, Jane Watson.
Classic, yeah.
When did, when did Elementary come out?
Elementary was 2012, so they're ripping off Elementary.
Oh, they are ripping off Elementary. Okay, that was a long time beforehand. I was like, COVID has...
It is always, like, such a bummer for women when you're like, oh, porn's had to gender swap everyone so there'd be enough women for it. Like, I love that the Avengers porn parody, like, back in 2012 had, like, Scarlet Witch and all those, like, more obscure characters just to get enough women for them to fuck.
That's incredibly funny. Like, I mean, it's a bummer, but that's also so funny that All right. Now I'm...
I would love if there was a Sherlock Holmes parody that was, like, really into being accurate to the fact that, like, he's basically asexual, but Watson fucks a lot of women.
Yeah, and he just sort of, like, deduces, I'm gonna show you... It's safe for work, now that we're at work. Okay. But this is the... It's, like... It's not a very sexy cover. It looks like a Blockbuster, like, ripoff cover.
Yeah.
If you look up...
It's very cute that they're both in the little Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, they both have the Deerstalker. It's a little odd, also looking at that, like, so he kind of has a more modern, like, Sherlock Holmes coat. And she is just wearing, like, jeans and a tank top.
Like a bra, yeah. Also, from, like, how they're stylized, I think maybe this is a parody mostly of, like, the Benedict Cumberbatch show.
Okay. Oh, okay. This one has the, so the back of the DVD is much less safe for work.
Okay. Well, I don't have any job, so I can look at it.
That's true. Well, did you want me to bring it back up? Sorry, I asked that. You can Google it on your own if you want. Folks, you can always Google this on your own. It's okay for us to...
This isn't SAG, so
yeah. Yeah. Sherlock Holmes in XXX parody or whatever. Not a SAG production, so it's fine to promote it. Hey, maybe if... I doubt... So I said to Lenny that I doubt this... I can't imagine the SAG strike going on that much longer, because once you lose to the nerds, I can't imagine you holding out against all the hotties.
I think it's so adorable when, like, writers post, like, we gotta keep speaking out for SAG. It's like, that's nice, but I'm also like, they're the most famous, beautiful people in the world. I don't think people are gonna be like, whoa, this guy who staffed on fucking Elementary also supports them.
Yeah.
Gotta get out there.
Wow! Did you? Wow! I can't believe Robert Carlock was out hitting the pickup. Matt Damon handed the megaphone to Robert Carlock, and everyone like lost their shit. Trying to think of like the most like when you try and think of like the most famous television writers who aren't famous for anything else. You probably find some showrunners.
Yeah, like Ryan Murphy and Greg Berlanti, sure. Shonda Rhimes. After those guys, there's a big steep drop-off.
Yeah, Rhimes, Murphy. I mean, Dick Wolf. But he's not... he ever... Is he considered a writer? Was he just a guy who...
I feel like the way it's structured, you usually come up as a writer, but maybe things were so different back then.
I feel like... It wasn't. I could be wrong... How many episodes? Let me see. How many episodes of Law and Order? How many And obviously he's still, I'm sure, giving like feedback on scripts and stuff. I mean, I don't know if he still is. Did Dick Wolf write? I don't know if he's credited as writing any episodes. Yeah,
but
he was.
Even if he wasn't on that, I feel like previously or something, like, I just feel like most people come up as writers. But...
Yeah. No. He was, for some reason, I had the image of him as just like the first guy who just like went to Hollywood and everyone's like, who's that guy? And he's just like, what if Cops? And they were like, ah! No, yeah, he, of course, unsurprisingly, was a writer on Miami Vice and Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
Makes sense. Yeah, the bummer thing also is that, like, I don't want to overstate it, but it does feel, because I'm sure it's just sort of how it panned out, it does feel like some of the biggest TV writers, I guess because the way that works is then you tend to become a showrunner at that point, we're all kind of like, it could be nice if the strike ends and everyone's just sort of stopped whining. But whereas, like, you know, I mean, Tom Cruise, I guess, is sort of he was smart enough not to like come out and say it. Like, there was the guy from Flash or Arrow or whatever who that, and there's. But, like, the Tom Cruise, I think there was, like, some whispers that he was like, maybe we can still promote our movies. Who said that? but, like, you know, you're otherwise, your Matt Damons and whatever of the world are all just like, woo, seize the means of Hollywood.
Just because, like, with writers, the way it's set up, there's just so much more potential to become the boss. And with actors, it's like, no matter how successful you still are always fighting for your next role.
Yeah. And then even if you get into, like, I don't know, directing or producing, I feel like it's still, it's less like,
yeah.
It's also, it's interesting, I guess also when you think about someone like Murphy, who at least I think considers himself, you know, hey, if you listen to this, Murphy, I think you're great. And I will write for the third American Horror Story spinoff, Spider Bite or whatever, where Cara Delevingne is one of five pop stars who gets a mysterious spider bite and everyone tries to figure it out. I don't know. There you go. That's something. Now the production started again, or writing has started again. But there are some people who I think some showrunners probably convince themselves, not all, not most, but some of them maybe convince themselves that they're like, why are we striking over like room minimums when I could churn out everything on my own?
God,
whereas like, I don't think, you know, your Ben Afflecks are like, what are we doing here? I should just be out, you know, being a Boston cop in a white void. Like, Void Cop returns this season. The point being, like, I feel like I got to imagine that they're gonna do a SAG deal soon, because it also doesn't make sense to start paying writers again for stuff you're not
gonna
be able to film. Like, and if I honestly. I mean, I know the writers started striking first, but like, as someone who is more of a writer than an actor, you know, you sort of feel like you're like, in their minds at least, unless they've really convinced themselves that they're. I hope that part of this also is that they actually had someone from OpenAI or whatever come in and be like, so if you want our like premium package that can write a movie for you, maybe someday, that'll be like $5 billion. And they were like, oh, well, never mind. Like, as someone who actually, so I'm actually using ChatGPT for a website content, like assignment I'm doing for a client, not for... I don't want to, because I think I told them I wouldn't talk about it specifically, so I want to give specific details. But, like, the main thing I'm using it for is something that is a very weird specific use case. And there are weird specific use cases that it works for, but a lot of the stuff, it writes like a fifth grader's school essay if you try and use it for anything too long. And there is this weird thing where they're like, oh, ChatGPT, like the people who like at the beginning were like, oh, the writers are so screwed. ChatGPT can already write scripts that are better than 90% of what like regular people could write. And it's like, yeah, you know that they only hire people who can write like the best 5% or less. Like, you know that like the fact that most people can write trash and it's trained on mostly trash isn't like helpful for this. Like, I mean, there are legitimate things. And some of those things are things I get paid for, like writing SEO articles where I'm like, sure, you know, that's
right.
A ChatGPT, they like the kind of, because I've tried to see what would happen if you try to do that. They suck, but they suck within acceptable parameters of what I think people have been willing to settle on for like SEO content. But there was like a thing where Adam Johnson, who hosts a Citations Needed podcast, was talking about this guy who was in, you know, at the beginning of the strike, was in this New York Times article being like, oh, they're just scared because I could input ChatGPT, write a 90-page script about Batman in the Old West inspired by this, and it could do it. So they're really worried. And so Adam Johnson apparently just emailed him and was like, can I see that script? And he was like, oh, no, I was giving a hypothetical. He's like, oh, so it can't. Because you should just be able to send it to me if it can, and you can't. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, the whole thing. I will say, I think that they did, however they're programming it, they did do a good job of putting in some kinds of parameters whereby, like, I don't think this is just pattern recognition. Maybe it is just part of the same pattern recognition. But I think that there are certain things, like if you type in a random string of characters, it goes, you typed in, you know, what seems to be a random string of characters. Do you have a question to ask me? Where, like, I don't think that's what the, you know, what, I don't think that's using its actual main technology, which is like the probability of what words should go next, to say that, because probably probabilistically that would just be followed by more gibberish if you were finding gibberish collections. So I think that there are always stuff like that. I will say, the thing that did impress me almost more than other stuff, and I don't know, because it's the kind of thing that I'm less certain how you program that and make it work, and maybe it's really simple because I'm just not a programmer, but if you ask it a nonsensical question, like not gibberish, but you say like, what time is the butter? It says like, that is not a question that you can quantifiably answer. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know exactly how they do that. But then there's other ones. Like if you try and ask it like, you know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? It's the sound of one hand clapping is a Zen koan to make you think whatever. Where it's like, all right, well that's, it's just pulling in, you know. So I don't know. It's always wild to me that all the people who are most, like, boosting this stuff is, like, the big thing. I'm like, you could be replaced by this. Like, you could. I understand why you're, like, amazed by this. And then some of the stuff is legitimately wild. Like, some guy was using a thing that, like, it can alter what you're saying into a different language, and it changes your lip movements. And, like, that's pretty nuts. Like, I don't know. The problem with all of this is it all seems like stuff that's just bad, right, and shouldn't exist. Like, it is – that is, like, genuinely impressive. But I see stuff like that, I'm like, it seems really bad that people can just make a video of a famous person or president saying something. That just does – that feels like the kind of thing where you're just like, you know how like, there was an ad on – X that people were goofing off on because it was for a product that is illegal for most people to have, which is a device to break into cars. It's very funny because the ad for it is like, did you forget your keys in your car? Well, this device could get it out. Like, clearly not trying to highlight the idea that if it's a device that lets you break into your own car, if you don't have the keys, then it lets you break into cars. And it feels like if you can make that illegal, there should be more things where you can just be like, oh, someone shouldn't be allowed to own the software that lets you make someone say anything, or like puts, you know, your crush's body onto a porn actress in a movie or something. Like, that kind of stuff, I feel like we should just be able to be like, hey, you shouldn't have this. That's bad. Yeah. This isn't a question of like, you know, oh, the technology genie. It's just like, you could do that, but don't. Stop it. Anyway, do we have more in the story itself?
I mean, one thing I think is pretty fun is that how when the stepdad gets cornered, he's immediately like, it's not actionable.
Yes.
I kind of respect. Like, I love him being like, yeah, I catfished my stepdaughter. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, this isn't against the law. Ain't no law says you can't catfish your stepdaughter. Like,
yeah. And there's kind of this unsatisfying thing they try to do where that is, you know, true. So they kind of back themselves into an unsatisfying corner. And Sherlock is like, well, a guy like that, he's going to keep doing stuff until he ends up getting the death penalty, which I feel like it's like this situation fell into his lap of this woman who like is pretty trusting and he knows has this extra income. I don't know that he would actually ever do anything again.
He just keeps doing Bugs Bunny shenanigans until he just Bugs Bunny being gets the shit beat out of him or whatever. The final Bugs Bunny cartoon, he's hung on the gallows. Yeah, I do also, like, Sherlock Holmes, he's like, I didn't do anything legally wrong. And Sherlock Holmes, like, you might have not, but I can still beat you. And he's just, like, runs away. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. It sort of feels like the master detective using all of his skills to threaten a guy with a savage beating.
I do kind of like that because I would like more procedurals where instead of people handing them over to the American justice system, they're just like, I can smack you a lot.
Yeah, I can hit you.
I guess that's just Daredevil.
Yeah, he's allowed to hit. He's allowed to hit. That, and it also, like, the legal thing reminded me of another, the Detective Crashmore, where they're interviewing Santa Claus, where he's just like, you know, you go in, bad behavior, like, about the tattoo. He's like, what's wrong with you? He goes, well, it's just not good behavior.
Yeah.
It's a given. You know, putting on a Groucho Marx nose and Woody Allening your stepdaughter, it's just not good behavior, allegedly. It's still funny to me that this story is called A Case of Identity.
Yeah.
Like, it's not mistaken identity or fake identity, because that would give it away. There's an identity, but we're not going to let you know whether it's real or not. Yeah.
It is so interesting seeing this sort of, like, early version of the crime procedural, because now, like, such a big part of it is the fact that, like, the hardest part is, like, actually pinning it on someone, like, actually, like, coming up with something you could take to court. And there's always, like, a third act problem that's like, well, we know he did it, but we don't actually, like, this will get thrown out. And it is just, like, so funny watching someone, like, not be interested in that at all.
No,
like, he doesn't give
So in the first one, it's just not a police matter at all because Sherlock Holmes is trying to steal something from someone else.
Yes.
In the second one, in the Redheaded League, it's
like he didn't do anything illegal, but then we catch them breaking into a bank.
Yes, then they're doing something incredibly illegal, and the police are there. And then, yeah, this one, it's just like, all right, well, whatever.
Yeah, because it's so funny because, like, Sherlock almost does, like, the typical police thing of, like, gathering up all this hard evidence, but then it's like none of that actually matters at all. Like, it actually has, like, a very early version of forensics with him like talking about the typewriter quirks, but then it's like, but also none of this matters.
It's like what happens, it's like the difference between Law and Order Criminal Intent, where they have Courtney B. Vance is just is like the lawyer, but they unlike SVU and Law and Order Classic, they don't have the second half where the lawyer is like in okay. court and like arguing in court. Instead, Courtney B. Vance is just there to show up sometimes and be like, "Oh, you need a warrant? Okay." Because instead, those are all the ones where there's not enough evidence to actually take it to court. So Vince D'Onofrio just has to be like, you know, huh, you know, that's so weird. The guy who did this case, who did this murder, well, he'd have to be a real genius, but you're a moron. And then yeah. they go, no, I'm a genius, I did it. And then he's like, book
yeah,
him.
That's like, that's something I love about Monk is that like every time I'm like, this guy only got caught because after Monk said some like insane specific thing that he witnessed firsthand, the guy was like, you got me, yeah. I guess arrest me. But like if they had just been like, okay, well, prove it. Like yeah. nothing, absolutely, not, Monk would have put zero people in prison.
And I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for that meddling OCD guy. Yeah, the, was Monk inspired by any specific detective or detective story?
I think it's supposed to be like Murder, She Wrote. Because I think USA at the time, their development was literally like you had to come in and be like, this is blank old property, but blank. Which like was something I think people made fun of at the time. But now with like Poker Face, we're like, oh, that actually was peak TV development and we should be doing that more.
That was, it's like MASH. But they're Suits.
I think Suits was like the first more sophisticated USA show, and that got them started down the path where then they did like fucking Mr. Robot, and now we've all lost our way.
This is kind of sorry. Yeah, they I so yes, of course, Mr. Robot, which led to the Bohemian Rhapsody. excuse me, and All Along One Path. This, so the according with interview with executive producer David Hoberman, ABC first conceived of the series, as an Inspector Clouseau-like character with OCD.
Did you know it was going to star Michael Richards?
Yeah, so are you looking at the exact same thing I am? Or did
no,
you just know
I
that
no, I know this. I've done like intense, I've done a whole podcast about Monk.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry, I'm telling you. Yeah, no, I'm just seeing this now because he had starred in A Private Investigator and the Michael Richards Show. They really lucked out because what year was this? Imagine, because Monk went on for 8 seasons and Michael Richards Laugh Factory was I can just look at it to look at these. I'm pretty sure this overlaps. So if they went with Michael Richards, then they would have had a real issue to work through. 2006 Laugh Factory incident. Yeah, that's what I thought. Do you ever think about how if that happened today, a bunch of people would be defending him and he'd become like not even alt-right, it's just the right now. He'd just be like Elon Musk would be like, you know, wow, I think some people need to consider that a comedy club is a place where truth and laughter is shared. Michael Richards, you should perform your routine on X. and, you know, now he's just – it also kind of feels like that's an example of someone who was, like, sufficiently apologetic and everyone's like, all right. Like, I think he's – you know, he showed up in the Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes about the
right. –
reunion, and I feel like everyone was sort of like they joke about it, I think, and everyone was like, yeah, you know, he legitimate, like, he did his time for the crime, like, it was a really bad thing, but he didn't, like, you know, it's not the kind of thing where he like assaulted someone, he said really horrible stuff and then he was really apologetic and he went away for a while. Okay. He was inspired. It says Breckman was inspired by Sherlock Holmes. So I guess just everyone's like, yeah, you know, a detective. Like Sherlock Holmes. But and I guess also because Monk's supposed to be very observant
I mean, I think that's fair. If you're doing a procedural, you're doing Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. It would be funny, though. I was like, oh, he's very observant. And I'm like, well, what, would you do a procedural about a detective who wasn't observant? Just called, like,
yeah, exactly.
The dipshit?
It's like, yeah, it's not really a Sherlock Holmes thing to be like, what if he was good at this?
Yeah. There's one which, okay, have you seen any ads? Because I'm seeing these on the subways now for the new Jesse L. Martin cop procedural show.
No.
So there is a new cop procedural show. Jesse L. Martin, who, by the way, we were the same year at Tisch, right? Mm-hmm. 2013? Yeah. You remember he spoke
Oh, no, I graduated 2012, sorry.
Oh. Well, okay, wait a second. Well, I also started out, I did a year at CIS before I transferred into, I did Tisch at, so I originally transferred into the acting program and realized I made a mistake and then transferred into the writing program. So I had to both prepare a monologue audition and write up a packet. I think I got some folks, I don't know if this still applies, but over a decade ago, I'm going to say I probably benefited from already being accepted to CAS, College of Arts and Sciences, NYU. And then I'm going to say that I probably benefited from already being accepted to Tisch when I transferred to the TV writing program, because I feel like that wouldn't fly if you were just trying to do that. You know, I mean, maybe my monologue and my packet were just that good. My packet, I do know, I hadn't watched How I Met Your Mother, and the hook of the pilot I wrote was that it was doing the How I Met Your Mother thing where someone is retelling a story. I did not know that was the case, and I later had Charlie tell me that he hates all scripts about writers, even though it was a pilot about a writer who's doing the How I Met Your Mother thing. So, folks, just you just got to be good enough to beat the odds, I guess. An Ashkenazi Jew getting into Tisch, it can happen. Anyway, the reason I brought that up is because Jesse L. Martin was, at least when I went to the Tisch introduction, which I guess would have been a year after most people did and 2 years after you did then, he was giving like the keynote address, and he was like, come give me a hug after, not to me personally, but to like everyone. And I did, but again, it was an offer to everyone. He had just like pointed to him and said, and you there, you give me a hug. That would have been kind of weird. Anyway, so he has a new show he's on. Did I already tell you the name of it?
No.
So, it's called The Irrational.
Okay.
And, oh, okay. I was going to ask you to guess what the premise is, but the premise does not seem, I guess I assumed it was high concept. And it just seems like it's, it says, it centers on a world-renowned behavioral psychologist with unique insight into human nature, and he meets his match in a female domestic terrorist who turns his world upside down. So I guess, is this maybe
they're just doing Homeland, but gender swapped?
I guess. Homeland, I'm but so gender swapped. They're doing the Blacklist.
We should do Homeland over and over and over. This is not Blacklist.
Blacklist meets Killing Eve.
I don't see how it's Blacklist unless she's ambiguously maybe his daughter, which I'm into.
Yeah, and they're still well, she's short-sighted, so she didn't realize that's Jesse L. Martin in
following NBC's The Blacklist was like the happiest time in my life. Aww. Just like so many people insist, like just making weird arguments where she's like, well, she said that she thinks of this guy as her dad, so that kills your theory. It's not incest, and it's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
I just, like, that was a major network show that lasted for years, and everyone was like, is she gonna fuck him and find out she's her dad? It's so fucking cool.
that's yeah, there should be more of that. That's the suspense that's that people want. Look, people are revealing their true preferences clearly with how much it's all like, I don't know if it's still the case. I feel like I don't know if like the step sibling and parent industry trend has like died down or whatever. I haven't like done a comparative survey, but I mean, clearly someone liked that. That was a big thing for a long time.
I remember I still have a pilot where it's a guy and his father-in-law, and someone was like, oh, that's great, I haven't even seen that in porn yet, but that was a few years ago, so I'm like, someone's got to develop it before porn beats me.
Guy and his father-in-law. I'm surprised that that's not.
If anyone wants to be at the forefront of this wave, I unfortunately do have one pilot where it's a guy, his husband and his father-in-law, one where it's someone in a son and mother love triangle, and one where it's someone in a father and daughter love triangle. So
you're like a patent
troll. If anyone's interested in pursuing this, I have written about it over and over and over.
You're like a patent troll. You're like sitting on all the taboo relationship.
That actually is what happens to me all the time. I'll like write about something. Like I wrote about pegging a few years before Broad City. And I'm just like always like, I'm a couple years ahead and just like no one knows about me. It's frustrating.
You gotta think about, all right, well, have they already made a comedy called like Waiting for You about a guy or a girl or whatever who's like really into edging? Like that feels like the next big one. They had that show, I guess it almost feels like a throwback to that movie where the guy promises not to have sex for 30 days and then he gets raped by his ex-girlfriend and it's like treated like a minor inconvenience. That's wild. Was that in theaters?
Did
that do well? I like only know it as like shown in pieces on Comedy Central. It's called 30 Days and 30 Nights because that's like what Noah did. Oh, 30 Days of Night.
I think it's 40 Days and 40 Nights, yeah.
Oh, that's what 40 Days. Yeah, yeah. 2002 film. Josh Hartnett. Shannon Sossamon.
Oh my god, the budget was $17 million and it made $95 million.
That's amazing.
Maybe they were
way ahead of the time. Because I feel like now you hear a lot more about edging, but they were like, we got a movie that was tapping in even beforehand to that whole thing. Is it that he can't jerk off either? Definitely. That's part of it, right?
I haven't seen it.
Okay. He vows to abstain from sexual stimulation, including masturbation, for 40 days of Lent. And he also, goes, I remember that he keeps meeting with his priest. He has like a cool priest who he goes to confessional with and like they play basketball and stuff. But, or maybe I'm stealing, that might be something else where they play basketball with their priest. Whatever. I know he's got a cool priest. And so he's like, oh, I'm going to abstain. And then he's like, keeps telling the priest about all like the sexcapades he'd previously been on. So one time he like goes to confession, but the priest's like making out with someone because he's like, I couldn't help it. All your sex stories. And it's his brother is the priest. Cause it says on day 40, do you care if I spoil part of,
No.
So on day 40, he walks in on his brother kissing a nun, and fighting to contain him. And it says, John is taking tormented by Mac's exploits. John is taking a sabbatical from priesthood. Can you do that? Can you just leave and go bang and then come back? I don't think. Anyway, fighting to contain himself, Matt has Ryan handcuff him to his bed and awakens from an erotic dream to find Nicole has raped him while he was asleep just before midnight. Arriving as Nicole is leaving.
Does the Wikipedia summary really say rape?
I was surprised to find so as well. Yes. That feels like a recent revision because that's what happens. Like, there's no definition where that's not what happens because the whole thing is it's his ex-girlfriend, I think, or ex-fiance or something, and she overhears about his bet, and she just wants to screw it up for him because she's just, like, one of those, you know, stock evil exes, not in Scott Pilgrim way. And so his friend, like, handcuffs him to the bed. Because I remember even thinking, like, back then – when I'd see, like, parts on Comedy Central. And so she's, like, he's, like, in, like, a goon coma or whatever, where he's, like, picturing naked woman. He's trying to get through it. And, like, as though he's, like, going through, like, delirium tremens or something. And then she just mounts him when he's handcuffed and fucks him till he comes and leaves, which is rape, but they don't, they don't treat it that way. Like, it's not like then it's like, oh, my God. And everyone's like the girl who he had started dating is mad at him because she thinks that he cheated on her. And he's just like, I lost the bet. Like, he's not like, you know, wow, what a horrible violation of my bodily autonomy. I am going to see a therapist in a group and I'm, you know, how can I tell the police this? They'll never believe me. Like, they're just like, ah, shucks. And he was so close to finishing the bet. So they definitely don't treat it like that. But so it is almost a little like, I wonder if they use the same language in the Wikipedia summary of Revenge of the Nerds. Now, like, all these old movies that treated, like, you know, these forms of quote unquote comedic sexual assault now are the new Wikipedia Gen Z editors coming in and being like, let's correct the record correctly.
Anyway, we can wrap up, but I just want to say,
yeah,
I'm not looking for the next thing and purposely being like, oh, what's everyone into? I'm sincerely horny and making art. I'm just saying that this just keeps happening to me.
Okay. Well, before we wrap up, then what's next? Unless you don't want to give it away, because you don't want to give away what you're working on.
Yeah, I'll refrain. If it's really based on what I write about, then I would say Philip Roth homages and satires of Hollywood are gonna be the big porn thing.
I can believe that. Maybe the new one will be uppity studio negotiators get dommed by writers and actors, but it's okay, like a consensual way. They're like, they were actually so bad at negotiating because they wanted to have a big dom set. All right. Anyway, what do you give the story?
I really like this one. It's trash. I like that he invented catfish. So I'm going to give it 3.5. It has just like Holmes being such a weird dick to no reason for this woman who had an insane traumatizing thing happening to her. It felt like their most housey episode, except for on House, it would have been her biological dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3.5.
That would have, yeah. House is just like looking, is like, you know, in this moment where he can't figure it out or whatever, and then he like sees a child's Halloween costume with like the Groucho Marx nose, and he's like and he like runs off while Wilson's talking to him. I didn't like it that much. I'm gonna give it 2.5. It's goofy. I like that it's goofy, but like kind of want a good mystery for one of these. The next one we will cover, unless the SAG strike ends in before then, is the Boscombe Valley Mystery. That one starts off with Watson and his wife at breakfast, and Holmes asks for Watson to leave, and she says, "Will you go?" And he says, "I really don't know what to say. I have a fairly long list at present." And she says, "Oh, Anstruther would do your work for you. You have been looking a little pale lately. I think the change would do you good, and you are always so interested in Mr. Holmes' cases." So she definitely has a lady of her own who she meets, and they go on adventures that we don't get to see. But that'd be really fun as another premise, is who's the fun, enthralling lady who Watson's wife runs off to go on adventures with when he's with Holmes. That's a premise right there. So let's see. Maybe we come up with that. I don't know. They put on disguises and go fight in the opium wars, but for the good side, which is probably the Chinese side. I don't know much about them, but I'm going to guess that's the case. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. You know what we're up to, but do we have anything you want to plug, Lenny? You want to plug your story?
Yeah. Follow me on X at Lenny Burnham, and I guess Blue Sky at, I assume it's Lenny Burnham. I don't know.
Dot Bisky, dot whatever.
Yeah, my erotic short story is called I Bet You Think About Me by Lenny Burnham and is on Amazon. We're joking about eroticizing the SAG strike, but it is genuinely an erotica that's about how movie stars are dumb and bad, but studio heads are worse.
That's the perfect thing to read right now. I think,
it's topical and it's got a lot of fucking in it.
I think that you're supporting the strike if you read it. For me, Andrew Taven on X and Blue Sky and Instagram and whatever. Got the monthly murder mystery comedy show on the last Thursday of October at 5:30, which is October 26th. It'll be a spooky one. Spooky. So, come to that and keep on listening.